Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice. Today, we open our show with a report from Public News Service on Labor Day rallies across the nation, taking a stand for protection of rights being eroded by the Trump administration and Supreme Court in recent actions. Then, we'll have a report on postal service to the U.S. being discontinued by dozens of nations due to tariffs and how those tariffs are impacting consumers here at home. On Green Scene, hear about a proposal to open up roadless wilderness in our national forests to logging and road building, potentially including Cleveland National Forest right here in San Diego's East County. From the San Diego Food Bank Director, we'll have a report on the faces of hunger across our region and how you can help. Former Congressman Randy Duke Cunningham has died, and we'll have a look back on his turbulent life, from his years as a Vietnam Flying Ace hero to the end of his political career after pleading guilty to bribery and corruption. High-rise apartment buildings could be coming to a neighborhood near you if you live within half a mile of a trolley or bus station, and we'll have details on how SB 79, a measure meant to increase affordable housing, could affect your community. Fentanyl and other drugs caused the death of a woman in the Las Colinas detention facility in Santee, the medical examiner has ruled. Plus, yet another person has died since then in a county jail, the seventh in custody death this year. The Lemon Grove Sheriff Station celebrated its grand reopening this past week after being closed more than a year and a half to repair flood damage. District Attorney Summer Steffen has a report out on the effectiveness of a new law that gives certain offenders the option of drug addiction treatment as an alternative to incarceration, and the impact that's having on local retail theft rates. From California News Service, hear about a proposed bill to help California foster kids and foster families recover after a natural disaster. East County property values are at an all-time high, bringing good news for home sellers, but bad news for those seeking affordable homes to buy, and we'll have the tales. On People Power, hear about a fundraiser coming up to help an East County horse rescue facility, the Horses of Tiernanog, recover after losing $5,000 worth of hay that was soaked in a recent storm. On Crime Beat, an arrest has been made in the stabbing death of an El Cajon man. Then on Destination East County, hear about all the fun and festive events coming up in September across our inland region, including an Autumn Jubilee, Grape Stomp Festa, and Appletime Tea and Julian, Oktoberfest in El Cajon, a 911 Memorial Walk in Lakeside, a Roaring Twenties Fashion Show in Lemon Grove, and Poway's annual Rotary Parade. Plus, find theatrical productions, concerts at several locations, Santee's Movie in the Park, comedy at Saquon, a health fair at Parkway Plaza, and more. And finally, if you're looking to beat the heat, we'll tell you where to find a county-run cool zone near you. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine radio show, where East County matters.
Welcome to 2025 Talks, where we are following our democracy in historic times.
We're going to make Labor Day a day where we stand up and fight.
Jobs with Justices Mackenzie Barris says possibly 1,000 workers against billionaires and allied protests across the country today support constitutional values and oppose authoritarianism.
We are seeing a full-scale attack on our basic democratic right to come together to collectively work for better conditions through labor unions.
Barris says the Trump administration has undermined union rights through mass layoffs and by ending bargaining power for federal employees. The Supreme Court is also declining to review a decision that ruled that states' public sector employees cannot be forced to pay agency fees or dues to a union as a condition of employment. The country's most conservative federal appeals court has ruled that the body regulating union rights is unconstitutional. The Supreme Court previously found the 90-year-old law establishing the NLRB to be constitutional, but the Fifth Circuit just ruled against it in a case brought by billionaire Elon Musk's rocket company, SpaceX. The board itself had been paralyzed by having too few members. Last month, President Donald Trump appointed two, but they need Senate approval. Meanwhile, Trump is painting a rosy picture of the state of labor.
Wages for blue-collar workers are now rising at the fastest rate in 60 years.
The administration attributes the gains to Trump's focus on manufacturing. Critics argue it's the result of the Biden administration's economy spilling over into Trump's term. The number of Americans filing new applications for jobless benefits fell for the week ending August 22nd, but tepid hiring could raise the unemployment rate to 4.3% in August. Analysts say hiring and firing are stagnant amid confusion over Trump's trade policy, and domestic demand has also slowed considerably, attributed in part to tariffs. And it turns out that low-wage workers are falling further behind their bosses.
At a time when many American workers are struggling with high costs for things like groceries and housing, low-wage employers are focused on making their overpaid CEOs even richer.
That's Sarah Anderson with the Institute for Policy Studies. Their research found that CEOs at the largest 100 low-wage corporations listed in the S&P 500 earn more than 600 times that of their lowest-paid workers. Women are leaving the labor force. The Bureau of Labor Statistics shows more than 200,000 women nationwide have left since January, while about 50,000 men entered. Sonia Passi is CEO of Freeform, a nonprofit that helps survivors of domestic violence. She says true equity in the workforce would require equal outcomes on measures like salary, leadership positions, and assets.
We've moved into an era where we talk about gender equity instead of gender equality. It's not enough to just say, let's all be equal. And equity really gets at what it would take for us to get there.
Passi and other advocates say good health care and child care policies could help bring women into the workforce and help them see equal results there. I'm Mary Sherman for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
Dozens of countries have suspended postal services to the United States to take time to adjust to the new Trump tariff rules and increased expenses. This includes postal service from 22 European nations, as well as Mexico, Australia, New Zealand, India, Japan, other Southeast Asian countries, and more. The suspensions of mail service follow implementation of new rules under President Donald Trump's administration that will end tariff exemptions, CNN reports. The previous exemptions allowed shipments worth $800 or less to enter the U.S. duty-free, but that expired August 29th, and starting August 30th, all packages are now subject to tariff rates applied to their country of origin, making postage much more expensive. Postal services will either have to cover the increased cost or pass it on to customers. Various postal services have told customers that U.S. deliveries will be suspended indefinitely until they have developed alternative systems. Service suspensions differ by country. Many postal services will continue to mail letters to the U.S., while others have suspended the postage of any packaged goods worth under $800, according to The Guardian. Letters and personal gifts under $100 in value will still technically be exempt from tariffs after the August 29th deadline. The change is expected to affect online retailers and marketplaces such as Amazon, Etsy, and Shopify, which have connected U.S. consumers to businesses worldwide. According to Trump's latest executive order, businesses may face an $80 an item charge for a country with a tariff rate that's less than 16%, or costs as high as $160 per item for a country with a tariff rate between 16% and 25%, and a whopping $200 an item for a country with a tariff rate above 25%, CNN reports. The United Nations agency that coordinates international mail deliveries is working to get small parcels dispatched to the U.S. again by resolving confusion over the pending elimination of a U.S. tariff exemption for low-cost imports, according to ABC News. The Universal Postal Union sent a letter to U.S. Secretary of State Marco Rubio August 26, expressing concerns the agency's member countries have about these changes. The union says its members haven't been given enough time or guidance to comply. Meanwhile, U.S. consumers are already paying the price. This reporter picked up a dry cleaning order and learned that the price had nearly doubled. According to the business owner, his costs have skyrocketed due to hefty tariffs on hangers and other dry cleaning supplies sourced overseas. For American consumers already reeling from inflation, which President Trump campaigned on reducing, the tariffs under his executive order are having the opposite effect, hiking up prices on everything from imported fruits and vegetables to building supplies such as lumber, further fueling inflation in both consumer goods and the housing market. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
The Trump administration wants to open up over 58 million acres of roadless areas in our national forests for logging and road building, including 71,000 acres of Cleveland National Forest in San Diego County, such as scenic areas around the Cedar Creek and Three Sisters Waterfalls. The roadless rule was established in 2001 to protect habitats and ecosystems. The proposal has drawn strong opposition from environmentalists and Native American tribes. Some tribes have stated that rollback of the policy could negatively impact access to cultural foods, animals, and other resources. Judith LeBlanc, executive director of Native Organizers Alliance, states, "Removing the roadless rule will lead to the destruction of indigenous sacred places, areas where we continue to practice our traditions and culture, and are supposed to be legally protected by law." She adds, "The Trump administration has weakened environmental impact assessments by cutting public comment periods and limiting reviews of impacts on public lands. On top of that, they have also refused to engage in the legally required consultations with tribal nations." She concludes, "We must continue to remind Congress and the administration that they have to honor tribal sovereignty." U.S. Forest Service Chief Tom Schultz, in a press release, claims eliminating protections for roadless areas is needed for firefighting. He states, "For nearly 25 years, the roadless rule has frustrated land managers and served as a barrier to action, prohibiting road construction, which has limited wildfire suppression and active forest management." But Alexander Seifert, senior research scientist with the Conservation Biology Institute and the director of science for the Global Wildfire Collective, disputes Schultz's contention. He says that roads are the dominant place where you see ignitions, since roads bring in people and vehicles that cause wildfires. In addition, plowing roads into roadless forests and cutting through forest canopies can change the types of vegetation that grow on the forest floor. The Los Angeles Times reports that a study by the Forest Service's Rocky Mountain Research Station, published in 2020, found that non-native plants are twice as common within 500 feet of a road as they are farther away. The study, which aimed to address the broader assertion that roads are needed to prevent fires, concluded, "Speculation that eliminating road prohibitions would improve forest health is not supported by nearly 20 years of monitoring." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is John Tidwell.
To submit public comments, you can go to federalregister.gov and type in "roadless rule" in the search bar to find information on how you can submit your public comments on changes to the roadless rule.
When people think of hunger, they often imagine faraway places or extreme poverty. But hunger is a very real issue right here in San Diego County. It's in our neighborhoods, schools, and workplaces, affecting families, seniors, military households, and children in every zip code. This September, during Hunger Awareness Month, the San Diego Food Bank is urging the community to look closer and recognize the hidden faces of hunger. "Food insecurity doesn't always look like what we expect," says Casey Castillo, CEO of the San Diego Food Bank. "It's not just about homelessness or unemployment. It's the working parent juggling multiple jobs, the senior choosing between groceries and medication, the military family stretched by rising costs, and the child who goes to bed without dinner. Many working families earn too much to qualify for government assistance, but not enough to afford basic needs. Rising rent, gas prices, and child care costs stretch budgets thin, forcing difficult choices between food, fuel, and housing. The food bank serves thousands of these families each month, offering fresh produce, pantry staples, and dignity. Hunger doesn't discriminate, can affect anyone, even those working hard to stay afloat. These are the faces of hunger. Older adults on fixed incomes often face impossible decisions. After paying for rent, utilities, and prescriptions, there's little left for food. Many seniors quietly skip meals to make ends meet. The Food Bank's Senior Food Program delivers monthly boxes of nutritious staples to more than 15,000 seniors, helping them maintain health, independence, and dignity. San Diego is home to one of the largest concentrations of active duty military personnel in the U.S. Yet many military families face food insecurity due to extremely high living costs in our region. Frequent relocations and long deployment add to the strain. The Food Bank partners with military support organizations to ensure these families have access to food and essential resources. Those who serve our country shouldn't have to struggle to feed their families, Castillo says. In San Diego County, nearly 1 in 3 children face food insecurity. Hunger affects a child's ability to learn, grow, and thrive. Without enough to eat, kids struggle in school and face long-term health challenges. The Food Bank's Food for Kids Backpack Program provides weekend food packs to 3,700 children at nearly 100 schools, offering nutrition and hope when school meals aren't available. Last year, the San Diego Food Bank served more than 400,000 people monthly and distributed over 52 million pounds of food. The need remains significant. This Hunger Awareness Month, you can support hunger relief efforts in several ways. Share by spreading awareness and challenging misconceptions. Volunteer to help sort, pack, and distribute food. Follow the San Diego Food Bank on social media and amplify the message of hunger relief. Advocate to support policies that fight hunger. And donate. Every dollar given to the San Diego Food Bank provides 2 meals. Food insecurity is a local issue, and so is the opportunity to help. You can visit sandiegofoodbank.org to learn more, get involved, and be part of the solution.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news from San Diego's East County.
Randy Juke Cunningham, a highly decorated naval aviator whose political career crashed after he was convicted of accepting more than $2 million in bribes during his tenure as a congressman, has passed away at age 83. Cunningham, who won a seat as a Republican in the House of Representatives' 44th District in 1990, died August 27th in a hospital in Hot Springs Village, Arkansas, after an illness. During his 14 years in Congress, also serving San Diego County's 50th and 51st districts, he was a member of the Appropriations and Intelligence Committees. He was seen as a leading expert on national security. His political career ended in disgrace in 2005 when he resigned after pleading guilty to charges of conspiracy to commit bribery and tax evasion. He served 7 years in prison for what was then reportedly the largest congressional bribe in history. Cunningham admitted to receiving at least $2.4 million in bribes from defense contractors in exchange for steering government contracts their way. The bribes came in various forms, including accepting cash, antiques, a Rolls-Royce, a yacht, and a paid-off mortgage on his multi-million-dollar mansion in Rancho Santa Fe. At the time he was convicted, his 8-year, 4-month prison sentence was the longest ever given to a member of Congress for corruption. He was also ordered to pay $1.8 million in restitution. In 2021, several years after his release, President Donald J. Trump gave Cunningham a conditional presidential pardon. Born in Los Angeles on December 8, 1941, Cunningham earned the nickname Duke after the actor John Wayne. Cunningham enlisted in the Navy in 1967 and went on to become one of the most celebrated fighter pilots of the Vietnam War. His service earned him numerous honors, including the Navy Cross, 2 Silver Stars, and the Purple Heart. After the war, Cunningham became a flight instructor at the Navy's fighter weapons school known as Top Gun at Naval Air Station Miramar. He retired from the Navy as a commander in 1987. Cunningham was also a college dean at National University and a graduate assistant swim coach and assistant football coach at the University of Missouri. He received a Bachelor of Science and a Master of Science in Education from the University of Missouri, as well as an MBA from National University. During his political career, Cunningham's district included a significant part of East County, and his image as a decorated war hero and commitment to national security resonated with voters in the region. Cunningham was reelected 6 times, with no less than 55% of the vote each time. Cunningham was originally sentenced to over 8 years in prison, but was released early due to good behavior. He later claimed he regretted pleading guilty and denied committing bribery. However, Mitchell Wade pleaded guilty to paying Cunningham over $1 million in bribes in exchange for lucrative government contracts. Wade was a defense contractor and the owner of Washington, D.C.-based MZM, Inc., a company that received tens of millions of dollars in government contracts. Reporters at the San Diego Union-Tribune exposed Wade and Cunningham's partnership in 2005 when an investigation showed that Wade bought Cunningham's Del Mar home in 2003 for over $1.6 million. The Union-Tribune's reporting team received the Pulitzer Prize for their efforts. Government records showed MZM Inc.'s revenue from government contracts skyrocketed after Wade began bribing Cunningham, growing to more than $150 million in just a few years. Kyle Dusty Fago, a high-ranking official at the Central Intelligence Agency, or CIA, was also convicted of fraud related to the Cunningham scandal. Cunningham was released from prison in 2013. He spent his final years in Arkansas. His longtime friend and political colleague for many years, Duncan Hunter Sr., released a statement praising Cunningham as the very best of American heroes who go out to meet our enemies at the gate. Hunter acknowledged that Cunningham has drawn lots of media criticism over the last 20 years, but he added, during the spring of 1972, when the politicians had abandoned South Vietnam, Duke saddled up each day with his co-pilot Bill Irish Driscoll and catapulted off the deck of the Constellation to fly a gauntlet of anti-aircraft fire and shoot down five enemy aircraft and save his men doing it, said Hunter. In his later years, Cunningham served as president of the American Fighter Aces Association and as a volunteer fireman in Hot Springs Village, Arkansas. Cunningham also remained active with many veterans groups. He is survived by his wife, Sharon K. Stone Cunningham, as well as a son, stepson, and stepdaughter. A memorial service will be held September 5th at East Union Missionary Baptist Church in Hensley, Arkansas. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
Large-scale high-rise apartment complexes could soon be built within a half mile of a bus stop or a trolley station near you under a proposed state law that would take away local control of developments and turn single-family neighborhoods into high-density housing. State Bill 79, the Abundant and Affordable Homes Near Transit Act, was introduced by Senator Scott Wiener, a San Francisco Democrat, earlier this year. It passed the state Senate in June by a vote of 21-13. The bill could come before the full assembly for a vote within days. Senator Wiener praised the Senate for passing the bill. Tonight's vote is a big step toward making California an affordable place for people to live and thrive, he stated. California urgently needs to build more homes to bring down costs, and building them near transit provides our public transportation systems with an urgently needed infusion of new riders. This is an idea whose time has come. Meanwhile, rallies opposing SB 79 were held around the state on August 23rd, including San Diego residents rallying in a Claremont park. State Senator Brian Jones, a Republican from Santee, voted against the measure. In a statement, he says SB 79 takes away control from local communities. It overrides city zoning rules and years of careful planning, forcing cities to approve big projects with no say from the people who actually live there. Local leaders know their communities best, not Sacramento bureaucrats. Neighbors for a Better California took part in the protest, claiming it's one of the most aggressive housing bills we've seen. If passed, it would strip cities of zoning authority, allowing developers to override local rules using stacked density bonuses, height waivers, and transit loopholes, even for imaginary or unfunded transit stops, a statement on the group's website says. SB 79 is not about solving homelessness or affordable housing. It's about eliminating local control and fast-tracking high-rises in established neighborhoods. The bill could also impact historic places such as downtown La Mesa, which has a trolley station in the heart of the city's historical district. Under SB 76, century-old buildings could be dwarfed by high-rise towers, and the city council will have no power to stop such development. While San Diego Mayor Todd Gloria is on record in favor of the bill, the Los Angeles City Council has voted to oppose it. East County neighborhoods would be especially vulnerable because the San Diego Trolley runs through Lemon Grove, La Mesa, El Cajon, and Santee. The Metropolitan Transit Service provides several bus routes throughout East County. A coalition of organizations serving lower-income communities, is opposed to the bill, stating that it overrides zoning near transit without ensuring affordability, disregards the clear connection between income and transit use, places public health and safety at risk, and silences the voices of low-income communities of color, communities that have long carried the burden of top-down zoning decisions. This is John Tidwell for East County Magazine, reporting on KNSJ, your network for social justice.
The San Diego County Medical Examiner's Office has completed an autopsy on 31-year-old Callan Lines, who was found unresponsive in her cell at Las Colinas Detention and Reentry Facility in Santee on May 12th at 7:25 p.m. After emergency efforts by paramedics and Santee Fire Department personnel, she was transported to a hospital where she was pronounced dead at a local hospital a short time later. The medical examiner's office has determined the cause of death was fentanyl and methamphetamine toxicity. The manner of death was accidental. When Lines was booked into Las Colinas, her intake screening urinalysis tested positive for methamphetamine, fentanyl, and additional narcotics. She had been arrested just one day earlier on multiple theft-related charges, including vehicle theft and resisting an officer. The sheriff's office has developed a three-pronged approach to combating drug overdoses in the jail that includes interdiction, harm reduction, and enforcement. It is unclear why Lines did not receive treatment after her urine tested positive for drugs. The sheriff's department has drawn criticism in recent years for the high number of jail deaths region-wide, including 8 women who have died while in custody at Las Colinas since 2019. Lieutenant Juan Marquez, in a press release, says the sheriff's department is, quote, committed to the safety of individuals in our jail and continue to make meaningful improvements, adding that a sheriff's family liaison officer extends its sympathies to the Lines family and will continue to offer support to the family. But Paloma Serna, whose daughter died while in custody at Las Colinas in 2019, reposted this message from Saving Lives in Custody, California, on her Facebook page. The message asks, "How many more women have to die before real change happens?" The San Diego Sheriff's Department and its contracted medical staff continue to fail those in their care. We demand transparency, accountability, and an end to these in-custody deaths, the post concludes. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Marie Johnson.
Yet another in-custody death has occurred in San Diego County. A 35-year-old man arrested August 29th was found unresponsive in his cell the next afternoon at San Diego Central Jail, and he later died at a hospital. He was the 7th person to die in custody this year in a San Diego County facility. According to the Sheriff's Department, several incarcerated persons in the jail notified deputies shortly after 3 p.m. that the victim was in medical distress. Deputies found the man unresponsive in his cell and called 911. They requested additional help from the facility's medical staff and began life-saving measures. Paramedics and the San Diego Fire Department assumed life-saving measures upon their arrival, according to the sheriff, and the man was transported to a local hospital where he was pronounced dead around 4:30 p.m. The man was facing charges for vehicle theft and possession of stolen property. Like the other 6 in-custody deaths this year, the deceased was awaiting trial and had not been convicted when he died. The identity of the deceased is being withheld pending notification of his family. The Citizens Law Enforcement Review Board has been notified about the incident. As is the protocol for all in-custody deaths, the Sheriff's Homicide Unit responded and is conducting an investigation to assure all other aspects are examined. The cause and manner of death will be determined by the Medical Examiner's Office. The Sheriff's Office has drawn scrutiny and criticism for San Diego County's high number of jail deaths for the past decade. At least 148 people have died in custody from 2015 through 2025, according to data on the Sheriff's website. Causes range from drug overdoses to violence in jails to underlying medical conditions and suicides. The death toll peaked in 2021 and 2022 at 18 and 19, respectively, with the numbers of deaths per year ranging from 11 to 15 in the prior 6 years, under Sheriff Gore's watch. Sheriff Gore resigned in February 2022 when Martinez was appointed, and she later won election as sheriff. Since then, deaths have dipped with 11 in 2023, 9 in 2022, and 7 so far this year. And yet, preventable deaths continue to occur despite many changes made under Sheriff Martinez's watch.
You're listening to the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news for San Diego's inland region. Now, stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show.
San Diego County Sheriff Kelly Martinez and Lemon Grove Mayor Allison Snow presided over a ribbon-cutting and grand reopening of the Lemon Grove Sheriff's substation on August 28th, 19 months after it was devastated by torrential rain. On January 22, 2024, the San Diego area recorded 2.73 inches of rain in a 24-hour period. Sheriff Martinez's team assessed the damage around the county in the sheriff's jurisdiction to ensure that deputies could continue to provide the services that were needed and respond to flood victims, conduct evacuations, and other emergency responses. At the grand reopening, the sheriff added, "By far, the worst damage was here in Lemon Grove." She also praised her team's resilience and tenacity to get the station reopened. Mayor Snow said, "When the January flood hit, the epicenter came right over our town. It was a devastating flood to our area." She added, "We are excited to welcome our deputies and everyone in the sheriff's office home. Thank you for being here." Lemon Grove City Hall is located adjacent to the substation on Main Street and was also damaged. The city worked closely with the sheriff's office to repair and renovate the flood-damaged facility. Sheriff's Lieutenant Joe Barry, the ranking law enforcement official in Lemon Grove, described the scene when he arrived to work on that morning in January 2024. "The rain was coming through the roof. It was coming under the doors," Barry recalled. "We basically had to evacuate the station within an hour. It was bad. It was really, really bad." Despite the challenges created by the unexpected closure of the substation, deputies were able to continue their day-to-day patrol operations in Lemon Grove while working from Heartland Fire Station 10 nearby. Command staff and office personnel moved into the Rancho San Diego station to continue operations for Lemon Grove. Lieutenant Barry said, "Deputies were resilient. They never skipped a beat. They provided the same service that they did prior to the rains all the way up to today," adding that response times were never affected. The renovation was completed in mid-July. Deputies and professional staff moved back in shortly thereafter. Barry voiced thanks that the Lemon Grove substation is finally reopened, stating, "We needed to be here. The public needs us here." The San Diego County Sheriff's Office has been providing law enforcement services to the city of Lemon Grove since its incorporation in 1977. The Lemon Grove substation is staffed with 16 deputies. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Tidwell.
New data released by the San Diego County District Attorney's Office indicates that Proposition 36 is proving effective at encouraging drug-related offenders to accept treatment as an alternative to incarceration. The measure, which passed by voters with 68% of the vote, took effect in December of last year. It allows defendants charged with possession of a hard drug, plus two or more prior convictions, to opt for treatment instead of prison sentences, aiming to address underlying issues of addiction. Data released in August shows that as of July 31st, a total of 1,778 cases have been charged with one of the two key portions of Prop 36, repeat theft offenders and hard drug offenders. In early April, the San Diego Superior Court approved the countywide implementation of mandated treatment under the new law. Since then, 98% of defendants who have resolved their cases and have gone through the treatment or probation screening process have agreed to accept services from the probation department or court-mandated drug treatment providers. Only five of the defendants have not accepted services for court-mandated drug treatment. According to the DA, local businesses have expressed relief over implementation of the repeat theft offender provision of Prop 36, with some reporting that stricter penalties are deterring theft and providing a sense of security for businesses previously targeted by repeat offenders. DA Summer Steffens says, "It's a positive picture 8 months into the implementation of Prop 36 and 4 months into a regional plan for treatment options." She adds, "We're already seeing very promising evidence that Prop 36 is restoring the rule of law, giving hope to businesses suffering the specter of repeat theft that has threatened the safety of employees and customers. By emphasizing accountability alongside treatment and rehabilitation, data also shows the law is working to address the core drivers of habitual criminal behavior," the DA adds. Data shows that Prop 36 is revitalizing drug courts by providing leverage to encourage individuals to engage in treatment programs. Drug court, which turns lives around for those whose addiction has led to a criminal history, has seen an increase in participants across the county, with 309 individuals enrolled as of August 1st out of a capacity of 440. DA Steffens says her office has been committed to successfully implementing the transformational proposition in partnership with the sheriff, county police chiefs, the court, and the community. Prop 36 provides stricter consequences for repeat theft offenders, those who are committing smash-and-grab retail crimes, and organized theft rings to stop the cycle of recidivism. It requires convicted dealers of fentanyl and hard drugs to receive a warning that the next time they sell illegal drugs and someone dies, they will be held responsible for a victim's death. The law provides additional consequences for illegal drug dealers who cause great bodily injury or death, who carry firearms while dealing narcotics, or are involved in the distribution of unusually large quantities of narcotics. It also incentivizes life-saving treatment for defendants suffering from addiction by creating the new treatment-mandated felony that offers treatment as an alternative to incarceration for those who are illegally in possession of hard drugs such as fentanyl and methamphetamine, addressing the root cause of many crimes. The DA is encouraging business owners and the public to report theft, share information, and support efforts to hold offenders accountable. Local small and large businesses have expressed relief over the implementation of Prop 36, anticipating that stricter penalties will deter theft and provide a sense of security for businesses previously targeted by repeat offenders. During DA Steffens' recent tour of a Walmart store in San Diego, store officials said they have actually been able to unlock some products in their stores that previously went under lock and key to prevent theft during a surge in shoplifting rings statewide. Nathan Smith, the lead counsel for Walmart, has some good news for consumers. He says, "We're already talking about which items can be moved around and unlocked." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
A bill before state lawmakers would help foster children and their families recover from natural disasters like fires and floods. At the end of August, the State Senate Appropriations Committee will decide whether to pass Assembly Bill 689, which would create a $2 million statewide Child Welfare Disaster Response Fund. Susanna Niffen with the nonprofit Children Now says the fund would cover urgent needs like transportation, interim housing, and replacement of essential belongings.
If the state is financially responsible for children and families in foster care, then they need to step up in moments of great harm and do something for these kids and families.
California is home to just under 40,000 foster kids, and there is no dedicated financial disaster assistance for them or their foster families. The state established the Child Welfare Services Disaster Planning and Response Unit in 2021, but it doesn't provide direct grants. It only provides additional support to county agencies during a disaster. In January, the Palisades and Eaton fires burned more than 11,000 properties, including many belonging to foster families. Niffen says when a natural disaster strikes, instability can disrupt the placement of foster children, making their lives even harder.
Last year, there were 148 foster youth impacted by natural disasters. This year, it has already exploded. As of May 6th of this year, there were already 264 foster youth impacted, and that was because of the Los Angeles and Ventura fires.
The bill passed the Assembly and Senate Policy Committees and was referred to the Senate Appropriations Suspense File, where it awaits further action. A similar bill failed in the suspense file during the last legislative session. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
An overnight safe parking site for people living out of their vehicles has reopened on Magnolia Avenue in unincorporated El Cajon on Friday after a year-long $3 million renovation project. It's open daily from 5:30 p.m. to 7:30 a.m. Improvements announced at a news conference include restrooms with running water, showers, and flush toilets, as well as a dog run, additional parking spaces, a meeting area, places for staff and security, meals, and an upgraded picnic place. Dejana Beck, director of the county's Office of Homeless Solutions, says this location is near and dear to our heart, as this is our very first safe parking site. It was born out of a journey to resolve a large encampment that was forming in this area. The Magnolia site launched in 2022. It operated for 2 years and served almost 200 participants, including 41 children and 48 seniors. It was a temporary site when it opened and then closed in August 2024 for these renovations. The county calls this effort Compassionate Emergency Solutions and Pathways to Housing. The county also operates safe parking sites on Bancroft Avenue in Spring Valley and in the Grantville neighborhood in San Diego that opened earlier this month. In addition to the parking sites, the county runs a hotel program that serves 250 households countywide in the unincorporated areas. Beck says everybody's journey into homelessness is different. We believe people need options. One size does not fit all. We aim to continue to provide options and really be able to connect people to these essential resources that will help them get back into housing, he resolves. Supervisor Joel Anderson, who represents the District 2 area where the safe parking site in unincorporated El Cajon is located, says, "We're trying to get people off the street and into supportive services. This site does that for East County. We are proud of the fact that more than half of those participants moved to stable housing options." The San Diego-based nonprofit Dreams for Change runs the parking sites for the county. CEO Teresa Smith says the upgrades at the site will really help our clients feel welcome and safer and more ready to access services and be ready for those next steps into housing. Now, last month, a group of unhoused individuals staying at a City of San Diego tent lot near Balboa Park sued the city, saying that site was infested with rats, roaches, and other health hazards. County spokeswoman Anita Lightfoot says the county's parking sites are different. "Our safe parking lots are for vehicle parking overnight only, no tents, and are empty during the day," she told East County Magazine. The county works to ensure its safe parking locations are in compliance with health and safety codes. Lightfoot says the county has not experienced such issues as the city did at its safe parking locations. Going forward, she assures, the Magnolia lot will be monitored to ensure it remains in compliance and safe for the individuals and families who stay there nightly. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
Land in East County has never been worth so much. According to Jordan Marks, San Diego County Assessor, Recorder, County Clerk, the recently completed 2025 tax roll assessment reveals the gross assessed value of taxable properties, including residential, commercial, and industrial land in East County. In the city of El Cajon, the value of taxable properties is currently more than $14 billion, a 6.4% jump from the previous year's assessed value. La Mesa, the value of taxable properties is currently at $11.2 billion, a 5.3% increase. Santee has taxable properties valued at $9.8 billion, a 6.26% increase. Lemon Grove also had a 6.26% increase, with total taxable properties now valued at $3.6 billion. For all of San Diego County, Marks said the gross assessed value of all taxable properties is now at a record $806 billion, the highest amount in county history. That billion-dollar figure represents an increase of 4.95% over the previous year. That's good news for the county in an era of state and federal cuts in funding of key programs, from health care to disaster response. But it highlights the affordability crisis facing those seeking to buy a home or even rent one. San Diego County is the fifth largest assessment jurisdiction in the United States, with over 1 million taxable real estate parcels, more than 55,000 business personal property accounts, over 15,000 boats, and around 1,500 aircraft. A record $7.73 billion in property tax revenue will be available to pay for schools, libraries, parks, public safety, fire, water, and other government services. Meanwhile, the 2025 assessment roll also revealed that the number of business properties decreased by 2.5%, or a loss of 1,361 businesses from 2024. The total number of active business accounts in San Diego County in 2025 is more than 55,000. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Marie Johnson.
This is East County Magazine's People Power, profiling local people making a positive difference in our community and our world.
This is Miriam Raftery with a People Power report. A surprise thunderstorm that hit San Diego County on August 25th drenched hay at Horses of Tiernanog, a nonprofit animal rescue group in rural Descanso. The storm lasted more than 2 hours and dropped close to 2 inches of rain, according to local rain gauges. Horses of Tiernanog founder Amy Pat Rigney says the ranch needs to order extra hay due to mold-damaged bales at a cost of about $5,000. She says, since our annual budget is based on 12 hay deliveries each year, this damage poses a real concern for us, especially during challenging times. So the group is seeking support to help replace the hay. On Saturday, September 20th at 5:30 p.m., Horses of Tiernanog will host a fundraising event at the King's Inn in Mission Valley. The evening will include a fiesta buffet, a horse-themed opportunity drawing, and a presentation featuring ranch residents. For tickets or more information, you can visit horsesoftiernanog.org. That's spelled Horses of Tiernanog, TIRNANOG.org.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news from San Diego's East County.
This is East County Magazine's Crime Beat. On the streets, reporting on crimes impacting communities across our region, helping to keep you safe and informed.
This is Miriam Raftery with a Crime Beat report. El Cajon police have arrested a suspect in a deadly stabbing that occurred at 5:30 p.m. on August 30th in the parking lot of an apartment complex on South Sunshine in El Cajon. According to Lieutenant Eric Thornton, two men were in an altercation when one stabbed the other, causing severe injury. The victim, a 59-year-old El Cajon man, was transported to a hospital where he died. The suspect, Stephen Matthews, who's 29 years old and from La Mesa, was found on the scene and arrested. According to Lieutenant Thornton, the suspect has extensive criminal history, including arrests for assault with a deadly weapon and firearm charges. The investigation is ongoing, and anyone with additional information about the crime should contact the El Cajon Police Department at 619-579-3311, or you can leave a tip anonymously at Crime Stoppers at sdcrimestoppers.org.
Welcome to East County Magazine's Destination East County, bringing you all of the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County each week.
This is Miriam Raftery bringing you this week's Destination East County, with all the most fun festivals and events coming up across our inland region. As summer transitions into fall, September brings seasonal events such as an Autumn Jubilee, Grape Stomp Festa and Appletime Tea in Julian, Oktoberfest in El Cajon, a 911 Memorial Walk in Lakeside, a Roaring Twenties Fashion Show in Lemon Grove, and Poway's annual Rotary Parade. Plus find end-of-summer music jams at Santee Lakes, theatrical productions, concerts at several locations, Santee's Movie in the Park, comedy at Sequan, a health fair at Parkway Plaza in El Cajon, and more. And here are the details. Santee Lakes Summer Jams concert series continues each Saturday in September from 5 to 7 p.m. September featured performers include Steel Dawn, Tropical Blues Brothers, Appian Way, Heartbreak Hotel, Elvis Tribute, Joker's Hand, and Ed Johnson. For details, you can visit the East County Chamber of Commerce website at eastcountychamber.org. Get ready to roll up your pants and squish grapes beneath your feet at the 28th Annual Julian Grape Stomp Festa. This juicy event will take place on September 6th from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. at Mangini Winery in Julian. You can also taste wines from multiple local wineries, savor foods available for purchase, and enjoy live music, dancing, and vendors. Find full details at visitjulian.com. Santee's Off-Broadway Live Theater will present Because You're Mine, a tribute to Johnny Cash and June Carter. Performances will be held September 12th through 14th, starring Charles Evans Jr. as Johnny Cash and Katy Grady as June Carter. Because You're Mine brings to life the timeless hits that defined a generation. Your ticket includes cheesy chicken enchilada dinners along with wine, beer, or champagne. You can get tickets at offbroadwaylive.com. The Main Avenue Revitalization Association in Lakeside will hold its 6th annual Never Forget Memorial Walk to commemorate the September 11, 2001 terrorist attacks. The walk will be held September 11th starting at 6:15 p.m. Meet at 6 p.m. at Mary's Donuts on Main Street. A tribute will be held after the walk at 6:30 at the Lakeside Historical Society. Julian Tea and Cottage Arts invites you to savor the fall season with an apple-themed version of their cottage classic tea, including soup, apple-themed finger sandwiches, and savories, a scone with apple butter plus an apple dessert. A children's menu is available, and gluten-free and vegetarian versions can be provided with advance notice. The Apple Time Teas will be held September 11th through 15th, with several seating times each day. Reservations are required and can be made at juliantea.com. Viejas Casino and Resort invites you to saddle up for an epic night of modern country music with Midland on Friday, September 12th at 8 p.m. The Grammy-nominated trio takes stage with a high-energy show, retro vibe, and hits such as Drinkin' Problem and Burnout. Tickets are available at viejas.com. The 60th Annual Poway Rotary Parade will step out on September 13th, starting at 9 a.m. along Poway Road. This year's theme is Celebrating Heritage and Unity. The parade includes marching bands, festoon vehicles, equestrian entries, pets on parade, and more. Find details at powayrotaryparade.org. The Manzanita Concert Series will present Hot Club de Clermont performing jazz and swing music on September 14th from 5:30 to 6:30 p.m. The concert will be held at Mission Trails Church. Find tickets and the full season lineup at manzanitaconcerts.com. The City of Santee invites you to view Wizard of Oz as a summer's end movie in the park September 20th at 4 p.m. The perennial popular movie classic will be shown at Town Center Community Park East. For more information on this and other Santee events, you can visit cityofsantee.ca.gov. Fort Cross Old Timey Adventures in Winola, just outside of Julian, will host an autumn jubilee each weekend from September 20th through October 26th. There is an admission fee for this event, which includes a hayride, cider pressing, hoedown and jug band shows, reptile interactions, candle dipping, and a craft to make and take home. Additional adventurous activities available for a fee include tomahawk throwing, archery, a slingshot gallery with paintballs, plus you pick veggies, herbs, and berries. For more information on this autumn jubilee, you can visit fortcross.com. You're invited to step into the splendor of the jazz age at a Roaring Twenties fashion show event benefiting Lemon Grove Forward Club and the Southern District Women's Club. The event on Saturday, September 27th, starting at 10:30 a.m., will feature a glamorous day of style and community purpose featuring a luncheon and silent auction. Dress to dazzle in your best 1920s-inspired attire. The location is the Sunshine House on Main Street in Lemon Grove. Reservations are required. You can reserve tickets by email Miss Martha at san.rr.com or just call 619-750-7285. The Lemon Grove Forward Club supports improving access to youth, senior, and educational activities while building relationships with other nonprofits and community organizations in Lemon Grove. Lemon Grove Forward Club is a member of the Southern District Women's Club. Well-known comedian Josh Blue will perform at Saquon's Live and Up Close and Personal Theater September 27th. After winning NBC's Last Comic Standing competition in 2006, Josh Blue became a headliner at venues worldwide, including late-night shows, Comedy Central, comedy festivals, and more. As a comedian with cerebral palsy, his story has also been featured on virtually every major TV network as well as major national newspapers. You can learn more and get tickets at saquon.com/events. You can get free healthcare screenings and learn about preventive healthcare and more at the Grossmont Healthcare District's Fall Health Fair at Parkway Plaza Shopping Mall in El Cajon. That's on September 27th from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. For more information, visit business.eastcountychamber.org. The Moxie Theater will present Blues for an Alabama Sky when it opens September 28th and runs on select dates through October 26th. The play follows a rich cast of characters as they pursue their dreams of making names for themselves in the jazz-steeped streets of Harlem, but those visions fade with the arrival of fall, the Great Depression, and a handsome stranger. For tickets and details, visit moxietheater.com. Moxie is in San Diego, but just a couple of blocks outside of La Mesa. El Cajon Oktoberfest will take place the last weekend in September and the first weekend in October. The German-American societies invite you to don your Lederhosen and enjoy two full weekends of authentic German celebrations at the El Cajon Oktoberfest. Guests can feast with gusto on foods such as bratwurst, sauerkraut, and ox on a spit. Quench your thirst with German beers. Kick up your heels with traditional folk dancing and games such as steinholding competitions. There are also interactive musical entertainment options, a band flown in directly from Germany, a kids' zone, and on opening day, a parade, tapping of the keg, and crowning of the Oktoberfest queen. Find details at events.germanclubsandiego.org. And for all of the events we've covered today, you can find details on our calendar and in the festivals and events section at eastcountymagazine.org. That's all for this week. We'll be back next week for more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
In the good old summertime, in the good old summertime, strolling through the shady lanes with your baby mine. Her hand and she holds yours, and that's a very good sign that she's your tootsie wootsie in the good old summertime.
With summer just around the corner, the County of San Diego has opened its annual Cool Zones program, giving people free, safe, air-conditioned sanctuaries to escape extreme heat. The county created the Cool Zone program 2 decades ago to give older adults, people with disabilities, and those with health concerns that could be complicated by effects of extreme heat. The program will run from June 1st through October 31st. Sites include the county's 33 branch libraries, community centers, and other locations across the county, including here in East County. A complete list of Cool Zone sites, hours, and locations is located online at coolzones.org. That site includes a map where you can type in your address and find locations near you. You can also call 211 to find a location, or if you can't get to a cool zone, you can even ask for help with free transportation. Extreme heat can be very dangerous for older adults and children especially, and everybody is recommended to shelter in cool locations when the temperature gets too hot. Working or exercising outside on a hot day or staying in a hot space too long can cause heat-related illnesses from cramps to exhaustion to heat stroke, a condition when the body can no longer control its own temperature. Signs of heat stroke or exhaustion include having an extremely high body temperature, 103 degrees or higher, dizziness, nausea, confusion, and headache. Anybody suffering those symptoms should call 911 and be cooled off immediately. Now, in addition to providing cool zone locations, the county, working with San Diego Gas and Electric, is now providing free electric fans to older or disabled San Diegans living on limited incomes. To be eligible for the fan program, county residents must be 60 years or older, or disabled, living on a limited income, must not have access to an air-conditioned space at their home or apartment building, and be unable to travel to a cool zone site. To learn more about the Cool Zone Fan Program or to request a fan, you can call 211 or visit coolzones.org. The Cool Zone Program is operated by the County Health and Human Services Agency. For more information about the Cool Zones Program, as well as tips to stay cool at home and locations near you, again, that website is coolzones.org. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery. This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, AK Jewel, Brian Boyko, Royalty Free Music, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine radio show or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show.